You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 17 July. We've got U.S. retail sales and import-export prices at 2 p.m. this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa, on the show today. Ken and Yana from Scope Prime. I want to touch on the Richmond update. Not bad, a lot of moving parts, but overall, not bad, I think. And then ASML, really good results. But man, that outlook spooked the market. Sipho Mandela Buthelezi from NMG Benefits Retirement, more than just a number. And Brad Benadel, he from Better Bond. They've got their Q2 update in terms of home loan data. We'll dig into how it is going. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines: MoneyWeb, are institutions falling in love with Sasol again? There's been massive institutional buying in recent weeks, prompted by the potential for further Trump tariffs on Russia. And Business Day, SA and US begin talks to reduce 30% tariffs before August 1. Ramaphosa confirms diplomatic engagements underway in an effort to de-escalate tensions. Morning markets: the US was green, S&P up 0.3%, the Nasdaq up 0.1%. The Easter's mixed. We've got Sydney a 0.1% up, Tokyo down 0.2%, Hong Kong a couple of points, 0.01% lower, and 10 cent off 0.75%. Commodities all green. Gold futures 3,345, Brent 68.85, platinum 1,440, palladium 1,282. We've got the rand at 1787, Bitcoin 117,400, and top 40 green open expected 165 points, or almost 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Telling now with Kenyon Yana, Scope Prime. Care, appreciate the early morning time. The Richmond, this is their Q1 for the period ending June 2025. I mean, the big number perhaps is 7.4 billion euros of cash. Around the numbers, you could buy Absa with that, but we're not going to buy Absa just right now. Moving parts here. I mean, some areas a bit weaker. Japan, specialty watchmakers a bit down. All in all, high-end luxury seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, and it's doing okay in Europe and in the Americas. I think what has not returned in Asia has been confidence since the COVID lockdowns in China. Yeah. I think demand is what's depressing it. But as you said, a lot of moving parts. I think you're seeing a lot of growth in the jewelry, section, where they did say they were able to pass on price increases in gold and essentially increase prices from about 4% and 5%. But what's really concerning, I think, is the other parts of the business, with the watchmakers declining by about 7%, and then fashion and apparel was also just muted with a slight decrease of about 1%.
Are we seeing, I mean, to your point, I mean, jewelry really good. And if we look at Hermes, if we look at Ferrari, this sort of really high-end luxury, I don't want to say it's immune, but it certainly, it has some cachet which kind of keeps it going, notwithstanding your comments, particularly around China.
Yeah, I think with Hermes has a different business model, where essentially they look at exclusivity, and that's how they're able to increase prices, and they have quite a lot of vertical integration. So even with that being said, I mean, Hermes at the top end is trading at about 55.8 PE, which I think is still the best of the pick. But I think it will be really interesting to see how at the lower end of the luxury brands where Richemont is, such as Kering as well as Prada, how they report in the next couple of weeks.
We'll keep an eye on that. We had ASML. I'm a shareholder. I saw the results out. I thought, not bad. Net bookings were 5.5 billion euros, which was 1.3 better than the street was expecting. Earnings per share, €5.90, 75 cents better than the market. But the market woke up and chose violence. It was the outlook, I suspect. I mean, because those numbers are good, but they did have, say, some worrying things about the financial year ahead.
I think this is what we should expect from the next earnings period across the board. I think because of the Trump tariffs, you've seen that there's been lower expectations from the street.
Mm.
But what's pertinent in all these results is companies are actually just doing the work and they're doing quite well. As you call it, ASML anticipates third quarter net sales between 7.4 to 7.9 billion euros, which is essentially in line with how they performed this quarter. But what I also think that I definitely like is ASML has quite good moats on smaller component parts where there's truly no competition. And for the AI-based drive that's really taken the US economy, this is a very important stock and very important component in that.
And that's just it. They've got kit. I mean, they're ultraviolet lithographs. I mean, they've got kit out there which no one else has. It might slow a little, but if we sort of gaze out, I don't know, 3-5 years ahead, those chips are going to be made and they're going to need the ASML equipment. There is no way around this.
There's truly no way around it. And I think it was just really in the outlook statement, the CEO just trying to essentially just water down expectations because they're truly doing very well. But what I truly like is the fact that they have great margin integrity. They always...
Yeah.
Finding ways to really have that margin integrity between 50 to 53%, which is like gold in this industry.
It absolutely is, and those margins are. I mean, Richemont actually has slightly higher ones, but these margins are insane. And perhaps Nvidia is the king of margins. But we leave it there. It's Keir Nanyana, Scope Prime. Appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter. ASML worth investing in. As I said, I hold it, and the market shows violence. It was down at one point. It was down 11 or 12%. Closed at I think 8 and a bit down. Would you be taking it? Perhaps you worried about those tariffs, or perhaps you prefer others. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with StanLib Asset Management. Invest in the StanLib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Sipamandla Buthelezi, head of platforms at advisory firm NMG Benefits. Sipamandla, I appreciate the time today. Talking retirement, and I want to start big picture. We tend to focus on the number, and the number is one of two things, age of retirement, but truthfully, we're focusing on how much we're going to have. There's actually a lot more to it. I mean, it's around managing income, but it's tax, it's lifestyle, it's healthcare, and all the other important bits that are also an important part of our retirement ultimately.
Yes, there's definitely more to it. So it's really not only about what you will have when you retire, but it's also just the fact that when one reaches retirement, your life changes, right? So the certain financial decision that you will have made during your employment time, and then you need to start looking at it differently. For an example, just take an issue of medical aid. A lot of people, when they are still employed, they are contributing towards the medical aid, and you find out that in most instances, there is a portion of the medical aid that is being contributed by the employer. And then now when you reach retirement, what happens to that medical aid, right? So most people will contribute towards the medical aid during their employment life, but when they retire, the medical aid is not something that is in the forefront of their mind thinking about retirement. So there's more to it. There's more to it. It's really a lifestyle. How do you maintain the lifestyle that you had during the time when you were working? What are the options that are available to you at retirement? What do you do with the money? Does it get taxed? And also, what do you leave for your beneficiaries when you reach a time when actually you have to leave this earth? So there's really more to think about it. And I know that for most people, they're thinking only just is about when I retire, I want to retire with X. But most people don't get to assess their living standard, their living conditions, and also what other additional expenses that might actually occur when you become older at the time when you reach retirement.
Yeah, and that medical aid is a great example. I have to be honest, I'd never thought of that. Of course, your company's paying a portion of it. Now you're responsible for it. The first big question, and you talk around income there, it's that debate around the different annuities, a living or a guaranteed. And it doesn't need to be an either or. You can get clever with it and do a blend, but it's knowing what your circumstances are, what you have, and what you're going to need.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it really starts by understanding the difference between the two, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are the benefits of taking a living annuity versus taking a life annuity, right? And also, what does it mean for you Understanding the flexibility between the two, because it's also not the same, right? So there's really, really a lot of stuff that you need to consider. So someone who is concerned about, I want to take a living annuity because I also want to be in control of choosing what portfolios do I invest in, right? So that comes with also taking accepting the risk that comes with that. Well, someone is going to say that I want something that is going to be a guarantee. I want a guarantee that's going to cover me for as long as I'm alive. And then that person was most likely going to go with the life annuity. So there's stuff that you need to consider, really. So do you want income guarantee? If the answer to that is yes, then you most likely need to go with the life annuity, because then the guarantee can be on a fixed amount or on the inflation, right?
Yeah.
If you're someone who said that I want to have investment control, yes, I'm retired, but I'm actually clued up and I want to choose what portfolios my money is going into, then you're probably most likely going to actually choose the living annuity and not the life annuity, right? Because with the life annuity, then the investment control is with the insurer. And then there's also just like who bears the risk. So do you want to pay the risk? Do you want the insurer to pay the risk? What level of flexibility that you want as well? If you want someone who wants high flexibility, then you're most likely going to go with a living annuity, because you can change the income, you can change the portfolio that you get invested into. But if someone says, like, I don't want any flexibility, I just want to be comfortable knowing that I'm receiving X amount of money for as long as I'm alive, then you're most likely going to go with a life annuity. All of these decisions can be very confusing. And I think if you're doing all of this in an absence of the financial advisor, it could feel like a very, very lonely journey.
I take a lonely journey indeed, because I mean the living as well. I mean that also brings in tax implications. It also brings it back to the point you made earlier around a will and potentially leaving something to the estate and your heirs. And I like your point there around a lonely journey. We've worked all of our life. We've got to the point of retirement, which is a lot of why, truthfully, we've been working. And it can be it's scary and it can be lonely. I mean, we need help, because these are big decisions that we need to make.
Absolutely. Someone did this definitely. I think it's not wise for anyone to say, I'm going to make all these decisions by myself, unless you really, really are clued up. But I think consulting a financial advisor is very, very important. So at NMG Benefit, one of the things that we do is we've got a department that we call it's a member first division, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this department is mainly responsible for assisting the members of the funds we administer throughout a decision points, right? And this is not something that members pay for. You when someone calls you and say, hey, we know you are 5 years to retirement and we just want to help you through this journey, you don't pay. They don't get commission. These are salaried employees that help with that. But the reason why we're doing that is because we realize that a lot of people save a lot of money through their employment journey. When it gets to retirement, they either don't get a financial advice, or they get the bad financial advice that does not take into account your full financial situation. It's really, really wise in my view that at least 5 years to retirement, you need to start having this conversation with someone who can actually give you advice, because then it's become the whole review of your lifestyle. You know, what are you still paying for? What are you not paying for? What are your tax affairs? Because this is another thing as well, right? So a lot of people might not be aware of their tax affairs at the time. And when you reach retirement, the first thing that happens is that if you owe SARS some money, SARS will get theirs first, right?
And I think an important point you make there is call in advance. Start that conversation, not the sort of month of your retirement, but a number of years ahead. We'll leave it there. Simon Mandla Buthelezi, Head of Platforms, advisory firm NMG Benefits. Appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Brad Bindell, Better Bonds International Head of Sales. Brad, appreciate the early morning. The Better Bond Property Brief, July 2025. A lot of data in here. What stands out for me is the second quarter, a little weaker than the Q1, but really good improvements year on year in terms of the home loan industry.
Morning, Simon. We are some really, really good movement in the indicators, all positive, and it's looking good for buyers around the country.
It does show that. I mean, it does. Yeah, and in fact, you've got the one illustration which does. I mean, it goes back to the low rates of 2021, and let's not compare back to that day just yet. But if we look back against a year ago, it does sort of play into the story that it's still tough out there, but consumers are in a better space. They are out there and shopping, and we're seeing increases in home loan applications, and in fact, in prices of home loans.
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing a growth in applications. We're up 7.4% year on year, significantly outpacing the 2.8% inflation. We're anticipating a rate cut at the end of July, and we're seeing low deposits, which is all bodes well for the consumer, and certainly improves buyer confidence and improved affordability across the board.
Is this? I mean, how much is the improved affordability? How much is banks perhaps getting a little less strict on their lending requirements? Or is that an almost impossible to tell?
No, not at all. I think, you know, the banks' lending policies have been consistent for a number of years. Mm-hmm. But I think what is happening is you finding the consumer's affordability is improving, and their credit scoring is improving. So, you know, less debt, although, you know, one could argue that there's the debt ratios in South Africa are still too high. Mm. I think certainly for those who are looking to purchase properties, the fact that they are lower deposit requirements certainly assists them in terms of affordability. So they have the necessary cash available for the transfer fees, etc.
You mentioned the debt there, and one of the data points is debt service cost as percentage of household income. In 21, it was 6.7%, but of course that was record generational low prime rates. It had gone to 9.1. It is slipping down. It's back at 8.9, and I suppose, again, moving in the right direction is the important number, but still, I would say a little elevated.
Yeah, certainly, and you know, one could argue the high interest rate cycle that we've experienced, one of the longest high interest rate cycles that we've experienced in history. So, you know, there's lots of questions around why the MPC is holding the interest rates at such a high level. And hopefully, as I said, you know, hopefully we see a rate cut at the end of July, and it's a significant rate cut as opposed to just a 25 basis point rate cut, which will certainly assist once again.
Yeah, we need bigger rate cuts. There's no doubt around that. First-time home buyers, they're active in the market?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've seen average home prices drop to 1.58 million. Mm-hmm. And first-time home buyers real prices have fallen by 8.3%. That's the lowest since Q1 of 2022. Mm-hmm. So it's moving to a buyer's market, looking a lot more beneficial for first-time home buyers. I will throw in a little caveat there. You know, in certain provinces, there's a stock shortage, so that doesn't play to a buyer's market, but certainly in Gauteng, Pretoria, the Eastern Cape, it's certainly a buyer's market.
You mentioned stock shortages there, because some of the provinces that popped up, I'm like, yo, it seemed weird to me. But is this still a Western Cape market? You know, we always talk around Western Capes, where the property is, you know, you get the best returns, etc. Is it still all about Western Cape, or are there other regions coming to the fore?
No, look, I mean, the Western Cape is still performing well, and it has done for some years now. But I mean, you mentioned interesting provinces. So, I mean, Pretoria, for example, although it's not a province, but Pretoria's regional growth has exceeded 27% in home loans. So, and Northwest Province is showing an upside potential with 10% price increases and 49% spike in platinum prices. So, you know, those sort of things, play into the buyer's hands. Also, building activities, KZN's outperforming every single province in South Africa with an increase in building activity completion of 53.6%, while the Eastern Cape fell by 46%, Gauteng dropped by 20%. So, and by the way, KZN outperformed Western Cape at 53%, but Western Cape was at 14.7%. So, you know, that gives an indication of the dynamics around the country.
Yeah, yeah. And stuff happening in Greater Pretoria, quite patently. We'll leave it there. Really. Brad Bendel, Better Bonds International Head of Sales. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We chatted with Simthembile Bapela from FNB Wealth and Investments yesterday. Clicks versus Dis-Chem. We asked which you prefer. Just over a third said neither for you. The rest was split between Clicks for the win, Dis-Chem always, and a bit of both. And there's no clear standout winner here. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchle, Siren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Three levers you can pull to retire richer.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.